And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
Geico presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected. Like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit Geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets.
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it. Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hey folks, Alex here again. I am flying solo as people are still sick at the Dodd household as well as the Mr. Christopher household, if that's what you want to call it. Basically, not everybody is 100% recovered. There's been, it's been a lingering sickness. I think people had pneumonia that sort of lingered with them as well as asthma and stuff. And it was just sort of timing-wise difficult to get everybody together to record with this weekend also marking the anniversary of when Michael had to go and to the hospital and then found out he was going to have his leg amputated. So he's, in considerably somber spirits right now. Not like he's like really upset, but it's been a year since he lost his leg. So that's something that's weighing on his mind. So if all of you listening could, send him a message just saying, hey, what's up, Birdman, and sort of try to cheer him up if you can, because, that's a pretty major thing to happen in your life. And, mix that with, him barely dodging being sick this time, with just a bit of of the effects of what everybody else in the building is having. And it's hard to sort of manage all that on your own. So I said, okay, I'll take over the show again just for this week. And then next week we're all back. We do happen to have some reviews from Mr. Christopher and Michael as well. So there are, there is something from Birdman in here, a couple items. But until next week, I believe we're getting back together all, for the regular shows of the next couple of weeks, and we're going to have the gift guide coming out in the next 2 to 3 weeks or so. So until then, I guess it's just me. There's probably going to be another Tour to Treasure coming this week as well, because I've got a bunch more stuff to review. But you're not here for that. This is the Twig flagship show. So what do we got this week for you? Well, we've got a Fallout 76 review from Birdman. We've got a couple news stories that could be weird, but are also new technology news. So it's sort of a mixed bag. We've got a few stories there, I don't want to get into that till I get to the news. I'll share that with you. We've also got my review of the MacGyver Season 1. Now, this is the original show from the 80s, Blu-ray remastered edition from Paramount. I'll talk about that a little bit later. We've also got Mr. Christopher reviewed The Meg, the home video version of that that just came out. And for Satan's Pantry, because nobody's been together due to sickness to actually record like a brand new actual tasting pantry with all of us, we've got the Fallout cookbook. Michael's got his final thoughts on that because we had done a bunch of Satan's Pantries on the recipes in there. So that final review is there. And then we're going to come back and close it all up, and I'll talk about what's up next. So without further ado, here is Michael's Fallout 76 review.
This is a fair request, and I promise I will not judge any person only as a teenager, and that this is no more right than saying all teenagers are drunken dope addicts or glue sniffers.
Looking at Fallout 76 coming to us from Bethesda on Xbox One, a review code was provided to me for this game. This has easily been one of the most difficult reviews I've had to record for this show in about 10 years plus. And you may be saying, well, why is that? Simply because every time I record a review for this, I turn it into a 10-minute rant of what I like and what I don't like about this game. So I'm going to try and give you the most concise version of this that I possibly can. Let's go. What do I like about this game? Well, I like the fact that it's Fallout in a different place. It's in West Virginia. It's in a different timeline, which is only about 25 years, I think, after the bombs have dropped. There's new weapons, new enemies, and some of the lore has changed. Okay, that's what I like about this game. Oh, and combat can be fun when it works right. Oh, and I still like base building. Base building can still be rather fun, especially when you build up a really awesome defense line. What I don't like, this is an online Fallout game, which means you're meant to play this game with friends. I played this as a single player experience for the most part over the course of about 15 or so hours. What I don't like about this is there is a story to this game, but there's no plot. There's no overarching narrative tying it all together. Outside of the race to get the nuclear codes, I guess would be the end game, which has already happened to a number of different people already, and the game has just come out. I think max level is 50 right now. That aside, I don't like the fact that there are no NPCs really of note that aren't traitors. There's just robots, I think there's a super mutant traitor, and that's really about it. Anybody else you see in the world is another person just like you, which means they can grief you. That's one thing I don't like about this game is PvP. You all have seen the video docs, how it works. I'm not going to explain it, but I have been dropped multiple times in one hit to a combat I didn't want to initiate. And it's just not fun encountering multiple bugs such as invisible enemies, and I was able to recreate this bug several times during my time with this game, and it was just frustrating because it was at a point to where I needed to do part of a quest, and I kept getting my ass kicked, and I was looking on the floor, the ceiling, anywhere to see were there enemies attacking me. I could hear them, but I couldn't see them, and I couldn't attack them. They sounded like rad roaches, but they were invisible. That being said, I don't like how I'm constantly inventory management in this game. Constantly having to balance junk, weapons, survival supplies. And I guess that's a mechanic brought over from Fallout 4 survival mode where you have to manage thirst and hunger. Now you also have to manage diseases and mutations which can happen to you. And the mutations mechanic is something I forgot to say I do like. I do think that's kind of cool. I have a mutation right now where energy weapons are less effective to hurt me, but they're also less effective when I use them. Considering how low level I am, that doesn't really matter. Go get them pipe guns. Loot in this game is level locked. I do not like that whatsoever. If I get a minigun, I should be able to use it. armor is level locked. It's frustrating. Plus, crafting is a pain in the butt. Adhesive and aluminum is still valuable as hell. Good luck finding a lot of it in any significant amount. It's a lot of busy work. And unless you have friends in this game, I don't see a lot of fun with this. And I've had people say, oh, it gets fun at higher levels. I've talked with quite a few of my contemporaries in the field, and they say, I don't know where this fun at higher level thing's coming from, because I'm still not having fun and I'm at a stupid high level. So, can I recommend Fallout 76 in its current state? Absolutely not. This game feels incomplete. It feels rushed to meet the November deadline. Now, if the game had come out in this state in, say, August, September, and we had massive changes over a few months to meet the November deadline, maybe, but we're not seeing those changes now. And Bethesda just put out a big patch, which fixed a few of the big problems, but it doesn't feel like enough. This game feels like early access. It doesn't feel complete. It feels like a shallow MMO with a Fallout skin placed over it. I don't like it. I'm willing to give this game the benefit of the doubt, and maybe it will be a No Man's Sky situation where maybe they can patch things in later and it'll be better. But in its current state, do not spend your money on Fallout 76 until significant changes are made. I'm sure a lot of YouTubers like JV2017 or Juicehead will cover it, so be sure to check out their channels as they're the most up-to-date information on Fallout, I think. So that's our review from us here at This Week in Geek.
But after total atomic annihilation, you may find the hand you were dealt has been reshuffled. Yes, gone are the simple days of yesteryear.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the mark!
It is news time. So what do we have this week? Well, Michael collected a bunch of stuff, and it would have been interesting to talk with everybody, but I'm going to give my thoughts on it here. We've got Peter Weller reportedly not interested in Blomkamp RoboCop reboot. Now, I did see this earlier myself, and I had been always wondering if Peter Weller would want to come back and do RoboCop, but he is a bit old. I think he's in his 70s now, so he probably wouldn't want to get in the suit, but let's just see what the article says. It's from CBR.com. So we've got actor Peter Weller has reportedly expressed no interest in returning to the titular role from the 1987 RoboCop. The actor's representatives confirmed his disinterest. This goes against RoboCop Returns director Neil Blomkamp's hopes, which makes sense. Neil Blomkamp's a pretty big fan of the original movie, and yeah, Peter Weller, 71. I don't know if he would be able to do it in the suit. That's the biggest issue, I think. So I know, I'm going to summarize basically the article. The movie picks up after the original Paul Verhoeven film. They're ignoring the second and third film, as well as the Canadian TV show, which was filmed in my city here. And they're skipping basically any other lore that came after that, including the reboot. It says, although he reprised his role in RoboCop 2, Robert John Burke replaced him in the third film. So it's basically just summarizing that. Now, according to the report, RoboCop Returns will have an R rating and take place a year after the original film. So will the issue be that he looks too old in the suit? Now, they could go the realm of he's got skin and everything and he's just aging because maybe his body's rejecting the cybernetic parts. Who knows? There's a lot of different aspects you could play with this. So I'm wondering who they're going to cast. Now, you know, they could be a lie. It could be that they just back up money to Peter Weller for this. But the only thing is, I don't know if he would do it simply because people don't know that he's gone. And I think he's got a doctorate in fine arts. Like, he's been working for years. Like, he's a very artsy-fartsy sort of guy. And RoboCop just happened to be, like, one of his only, I would say, like, genre or sort of mainstream roles. So, I don't know. Had they come to him maybe 10 years ago when he was 60, maybe he would have done it. Who knows? But I know that he really didn't care for how hot the suit was to wear back in the 80s and the early 90s. And that's why he didn't want to do the third film. So technology's come a far, far way, and it's come along so well compared to what we used to have to deal with the, you know, hard plastic or like rubber suits. So now you can make things that are a lot cooler to wear and a lot lighter. So I guess it would be possible to do. I feel like it might be 10, 15 years too late for him. Now, that's not to say that he couldn't do it, and I would kind of hope he... I was always hoping that he would come back and do another RoboCop, especially since Blomkamp's one of the best directors to look at in the last few years with District 9. And I liked Elysium. Some people didn't. And I also really liked... Chappie that he made. So he knows how to make interesting science fiction movies that have a very visceral feel to it. So I can see him being a good successor to Paul Verhoeven on that. A lot better than the second and third films were, because by the third film it was like rated PG and it was with ninjas and ridiculous bullshit. So it's kind of sad news, but who knows. The next story we've got is Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Warner Brothers settle with Satanic Temple over goat-headed statue. Now, see, this one is one of those stories that could have been put into the weird thing, but it's not. It's more of... it's weird, but it's also mostly just about like copyright and like trademarks. So the Satanic Temple and producers of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina have reached a settlement in a lawsuit over the statue of the goat deity Baphomet that's used as a set decoration in the Netflix series many times throughout the episodes. They sued Netflix and Warner Brothers earlier this month for appropriating our copyrighted monument designed to promote their asinine satanic panic fiction, according to TSD's co-founder. Warner Bros. Confirmed the settlement to The Hollywood Reporter, but declined to comment further. TST lawyer Stuart DeHaan released a statement Wednesday in regards to the settlement. Han said that Netflix has to acknowledge copied elements of the Baphomet statue in the credits of the episode that are already been filmed. The Satanic Temple is pleased to announce that the lawsuit is filed against Warner Brothers and Netflix has been amicably settled. The unique elements of the Satanic Temple's Baphomet statue will be acknowledged in the credits of episodes that have already been filmed. The remaining terms of the settlement are subject to a confidentiality agreement, he said. I wonder if they had to, like, sign everything in blood. In the statement, the temple said that it received a large amount of hate in recent weeks. Gee, I wonder why. Let's see. Americans... Bible Belt, Satan Church. Gee, I wonder why they were getting hate. I wonder if it was more hate than usual because people forgot that they existed. I've gotten quite a bit of hate mail from people seemingly basic enough to conceive of the situation as one. That's weird. Sorry, there was weird wording there. I think I found an error in the spelling of the Global News article. Anyway, the truth is, it is a poor commentary upon our entire culture, in my eyes, that media overwhelmed this copyright claim. So basically, I guess Satan wins. So Satan and his followers sued big media, and they won. Hail Satan, I guess. This is actually kind of interesting because, you know, for once, you've got, you know, a cult church, like a satanic church, that is in the media because they were the person that was being persecuted against or transgressed, and they won in court. So I think that might be a first. And if you, you know, end up looking online and you look up this Sabrina lawsuit case, you can see the statue. It's pretty much 100% the same. Like, all they've done is they've placed, it's basically a statue of a goat-headed angel sort of demon deity. And it's got its hand raised in the air with its fingers in the air. And there's two children looking up towards it. Well, all they did was place them a little farther apart, the children, and put a little less detail in the actual statue. But it's about 99%. It's basically a dollar store version. It's pretty darn close. So I can see why. Like, there's really no mistaking it. Like, had they put it in a different position or had the children in a different position, it would have worked fine. You could have been, you know, said it was, you know, we're taking artistic license with it. But this was a case of we're about 90-95% exactly the same statue. So yeah, there's no way a judge would have said, oh no. But no, they definitely went, who knows what kind of money they won on this too. So this makes me wonder, if you watch Netflix and you're a person watching Sabrina, does this mean that you're officially supporting Satan? Because part of the proceeds and money, probably, because there's that confidentiality agreement, there's probably money from every episode watched that goes to the Church of Satan now. So we'll see how this goes. So yeah, again, it's sort of weird, but more of a legal terminology. And I guess I don't know. So most of these stories sort of can go into both this week. It's interesting. And that's going to do it for the two stories we've got for the news. Let me think. Can I finish up something here with what's new with me? Oh, yes. Black Friday. For anybody that was, you know, first of all, happy Turkey Day to any of our American fans. I guess, you know, it's always great that you do it, but it's a little late. Yeah, ours was done in October. So, basically, I always like to scour for the big sales and you know, what's new this year? What's the big hot ticket item? The big thing seemed to be a lot of smart TVs and 4K TVs dropping in price. I've already got one, so that wasn't a big deal. And I'm, you know, not somebody with a ton of cash, so I was pretty strapped. I was like, what can I get? Well, EB Games up here, GameStop in the States, they've always got some pretty good deals. So I was able to trade a few games in and stack up a bunch of promotions. So basically, I'm an Onyx member, so what that means is I get 15% more to trade in stuff. I also get 15% off used items, and that also stacked with whatever bonuses we're currently on for the Black Friday weekend flyer. So basically, I was able to trade three games in, and that was enough money to buy a Wii U completely. Now, I ended up, basically, the way it stacked was I ended up getting, I believe it was 45% more in trade credit towards it, and got 15% off the system and paid no tax on it. So it was kind of a crazy deal. I'm not somebody who ever had a Wii U, so I was just trying to find titles that aren't available on the Switch and probably won't get ported, because there's a bunch that use the gamepad heavily that you're not going to really be able to translate to the Switch later on unless they do some major changes and fuckery with it. So that's basically what's new with me, and I've been basically just trying to play a bunch of games. Like, I finally was able to pick up and play Yoshi's Woolly World. Very, very fun. So that's basically news there. There wasn't a whole lot else, because being that it was Thanksgiving week, there's not a whole lot of news that comes out that week. So that's going to do it for the news. Hopefully everybody had, you know, a great Thanksgiving and was able to traverse the Black Friday crowds without actually dying. I fully imagine our stories next week are going to be much more interesting with all the news coming out of what happened on Black Friday and, you know, the whole weekend, Cyber Monday and whatnot. So that's it for the news.
Those magnificent bastards!
Color me kooky, but something very odd is going on around here.
You're not allowed to talk anymore.
MacGyver is back, and I'm not talking about the current running TV show. I'm talking about the original MacGyver with Richard Dean Anderson of Stargate fame from the 1980s. It is on Blu-ray. Paramount has gone and started releasing 80s shows and some other shows from the 90s library on Blu-ray as of the last few months, and we got a chance to take a look at the season one of the original MacGyver show. Now, this is a show that I owned, I believe, individual seasons four when they were first coming out about 10 years ago, 10, 15 years. And I wasn't a big fan of the original release because the discs were easily scratched and there were some technical glitches with them where they just looked no better than if I had taped it off TV myself. The audio was always a little better on those, but for the most part, I wasn't a big fan back then. Now, I've gone and watched this. It took a bit of time to review because I had to watch most of it just to get the gist of how it feels. It looks to me like they have gone and scanned it in at, you know, an HD master, but they haven't done a lot of remastering to it. This isn't like other Paramount releases like the Star Trek series where they're putting, you know, a lot of money into fully restoring it. Like, if you look at Star Trek The Next Generation, it looks like it was filmed today. Like, really high-quality elements where they went and redid special effects and everything. Now, that's because there's a huge fan base of Star Trek fans that are willing to pay for, you know, a premium to have that sort of thing done. It's sort of their flagship program, I guess, for the entire Paramount network. Now, this, I'm sort of torn. I really liked MacGyver, and I still like the episodes. They have a sort of 80s charm to them. The only thing I have a problem with is this isn't a very good transfer. I found that in the corners of the screen and areas where there's solid colors, you get a shimmering effect. That usually happens when some digital noise reduction is applied, or when the codec bitrate is too low, or it wasn't properly scanned in. I see it, because I'm somebody who notices these things, I see it, it's there, it doesn't take away from the episodes, and only because I was critiquing it. If I was just sitting there to watch, it would be fine. It's just, I'm looking at it and I go, oh, I started noticing it just in the corner a little bit, and once you notice it, it's there. It's not in every scene, though. It seems to be in only certain scenes of episodes, so, and not every episode has it, just some episodes have it, so I'm assuming it's an issue with maybe whatever algorithm they were using for reducing some noise from the film stock on some of the lower quality stocks. And I tried it in a couple different TVs and a couple different players, and it did the same thing. So I'm not pleased with that, but it's still a good transfer as far as being better than the DVD. It's leagues above with the DVD. It's just not up to the standard that I'm used to seeing, especially from Paramount, where Paramount puts out really, really high quality remasters. Like they put out the Honeymooners remaster from the 50s, and it looks flawless. The I Love Lucy season 1, the Andy Griffith Show, they look flawless. You look at pretty much anything else they've put out on Blu-ray has been really high quality. Even, you know, like I said, shows that are 30 years older than this show. So it was a little surprising to see that. The audio seems to be basically ripped directly from the DVDs. There isn't anything different on there. It's not like you're getting any higher quality audio. There's absolutely no special features. This is a fairly bare-bones release, and I feel like they're putting this out just to sort of test the waters because the new show is popular. You know, would we want to see more of this? And I would say if you're a hardcore fan, it's definitely worth picking up, but the price point. This, in Canada, is retailing anywhere from $60 to $80, and it's sold out right now, so you're going to end up paying more than that on the aftermarket for it. So it's being priced at the same price point that they were charging for the Star Trek The Next Generation series, individual seasons, but doesn't have the exact same tender love and care or any of the special features of it. So until this drops in price or they start releasing, let's say, a complete season or collector's pack of all the seasons, I wouldn't say the average casual fan should pick it up. It is worth it if you are a hardcore fan, though, because it is going to be the best way that you can possibly watch MacGyver right now. So my recommendation is, wait, if you're a casual fan. If you're a hardcore fan, pick it up.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Mama,
On to the weird news. Yes, it's that time where we get into the weird, wacky, and just plain strange. What do we have for you this week? Well, Amazon removes app after Santa threatens children with death. We're going to start with that one right now. Oh, this is going to be good. A woman in England was outraged last week when she discovered Santa Claus threatening to look for and kill her children via Kindle app. Addlestone native Kirstie Elizabeth Taylor posted a viral video Thursday that appeared to show an app entitled Call Santa Claus New 2018 in Action. The app simulated an incoming telephone call from Santa Claus when activated. "Hello there, can you hear me?" Santa's message could be heard asking. The tone took a sinister turn after the greeting. "In 5 nights, if you're free, I will look for you, and I will find you, and I will kill you." The video has been viewed more than 335,000 times as of this writing. Taylor explained in her post that the tablet belonged to her 12-year-old son, Finley, but it was her 3-year-old daughter, Evie, who brought attention to the issue. The preschooler had tears in her eyes after experiencing the app, according to KidSpot. What sort of sick, twisted person would have make an app made for children to call Santa into this? At least one review on Amazon's UK corroborated her experience. Voice sounds like someone who smokes 2 packs of cigarettes a day, and then they threaten to come and kill you. Oh, God. Really not nice, especially when you think it's for children. Amazon confirmed to Yahoo that the app has been removed as it's in violation of our policies. The publisher will be contacted and an investigation will be launched, according to The Sun. So this is from Global News Canada. Global News reached out to Taylor for request for comment, but she said she didn't immediately register what the app was saying. "My daughter didn't find the app as such. She brought the tablet to me and asked to Santa, and I went to the app. In order to reach the actual call, I had to click call now, then answer the phone button, and then the voice alerted so the tablet man." So basically, you have to go into it and dig into it. So like a 3-year-old won't necessarily find it themselves, is what she's saying. But it's in there, and if children get at it, you know, let's say like somebody who's like 6 years old, 6 or 7, they'll be able to easily find it. And that can be pretty terrifying to some kids who, you know, don't have a basis for reality where it's like what's real and what's fake. So basically, they're being investigated. Like, it's clearly meant as a joke app for adults, but it seems to be marketed towards children, which is a big problem. So to give, you know, context, I remember when I was a young kid that... You know, you used to be able to write to Santa Claus, and if you wrote to Santa Claus up here in Canada, for all of our American listeners, what was interesting is you would write your Santa Claus letter and the postal code, or like you guys have zip codes, but the postal code, because we have alternating letters and numbers for ours, and it would spell out ho, ho, ho here, H-O-H-O-H-O, or H-0-H-0-H-O. So that would go to the post office, and it would actually go to a department at the post office where you would actually get a letter sent back to you with your name. Some of it was form letter, but they would fill in a couple blanks, you know, basically behave and all that. And that would get mailed to you for free. So that was part of the post office. They used to do that in the 80s and 90s here. And a lot of those letters would also get read by Santa Claus when Santa Claus would come to visit in December before Christmas on YTV. YTV being... I guess a mixture of it's like our version of Nickelodeon and Disney Channel and Family Channel. It was a basic cable channel that pretty much everybody had if you had cable. And it was, I think originally out of Paris, Ontario, but it was the national children's channel that ran from like the late 80s. It's still on, but it's not the same as it was, where there was a lot of local programming and things like this, where Santa Claus would come and read to you. Santa Claus would read the letters on air and talk to the children individually, as if he was talking to you, like, personally on the screen. So we had that, you know, that fantasy was in our heads that Santa Claus, the real Santa Claus, would be on TV talking to you. And also, there was my grandparents. I remember threatened me one time when I was behaving poorly at, I think it was Thanksgiving or some visit that we had there. And, you know, I wasn't listening to my parents. And they said, you know, we'll call the North Pole. And, we'll dial it. All you have to do is press, all we have to do is see this button here. And it was the star button, but they said it was a snowflake. And if you press that button and then press, I forget the exact digits with it, but the Bell Canada service had set up an actual, like one of those toll-free lines that if you called it, it would play a recorded message from the North Pole. So, you know, I said, they threatened me, we'll call and we'll tell Santa not to bring you anything. And I was like 5 or 6. And I said, oh, no, it's not true. You don't have it. And they said, fine, dial it yourself. So I dialed the number myself. And it went to the North Pole, and it says, this is the North Pole naughty line and all this. And I freaked out, hung up the phone. Like, it was obviously going to be an automated message that played for a minute or two, but it was enough to scare children. It was literally a phone line to the North Pole to scare children into behaving. So that's what I can attribute to this. That's the equivalent. The difference was that it wasn't malicious. This wasn't like I called the North Pole and then, you know, this is like Elf Department. Oh, yeah, we're going to fucking kill you. We're going to cut your goddamn throat, child. When you sleep, we're going to come in there and I'm going to stick a knife right in your sack. You know, it wasn't anything like that. But that was enough to terrify me as like a 5 or 6 year old into behaving. So I can only imagine what it would be like if you're 4, 5, 6, 7 maybe. And you think you're getting a message from Santa Claus, and Santa Claus basically gives you the Liam Neeson speech from Taken, where he's like, he's going to find you. He's going to kill you. So I could see that being troublesome. So, you know, it probably wasn't meant to be malicious to kids, but, you know, maybe a little bit for the lols, mostly for the adults. But I can see why they got in trouble, especially if they are marketing it to children. So I'm glad that's gone. And then the other story that Birdman found, oh my God. Okay. So I opened up, he sends, it's a link to an Indiegogo campaign for Autoblow 2, the robotic oral sex stimulator for men. And it's literally a picture, like the video they always have at Indiegogo, is a picture of a dude with the product. And he's got a really like constipated, consternated look on his face as he's trying to jam a giant, a giant cucumber into the thing. So I'll read you a bit of the overview for it, because apparently this is what he wants to be read. The Autoblow 2 was successfully crowdfunded. So let's see here. What is this? Oh, good God. Okay. Oh, no. I'll just read the overview for you right here. The Autoblow 2 Plus, it's a Plus model, by the way, was successfully crowdfunded here on Indiegogo and is now owned by more than 200,000 men in 50 countries. Jeez. So, why? Oh, dear God. I'm pretty sure this isn't supposed to be for our Christmas gift guide, but basically, good God. It's, oh, sorry, I can see this. There's just descriptive videos and everything on how it works. Oh, it's ridiculous. Basically, it looks like sex toys are on the rise, and you can just buy them on Indiegogo now, and you can crowdfund crazy. I don't know if you'd want to admit that you bought one of those things on there, but that's just absolutely crazy and out of the realm of what I'm used to. So that's just a little snippet, I guess, that Indiegogo is now selling this sort of stuff, and you can crowdfund these sorts of products. And you know what? I'm going to pull up another story here for you, just so we can compliment this, because this was just a tiny little, you know, funny snippet. Japanese company's hands-free umbrella looks like a giant condom for your head. And it does. remember to always use protection from the rain. Japan has an extremely convenient and efficient rail network. But in practice, going out for the day involves not just riding, but plenty of walking. A 10-minute walk from your home to the nearest station is considered average. And after you get off the train, you've still got to hoof it to your final destination. This makes rainy days a pain in the butt. Using public transportation means having to carry a bag with whatever you need for the day. And you also have to use your map on your app on your phone to navigate Japan's confusingly unnamed street system. Yeah, that's another story to talk about another day. They don't really name areas. They don't name streets. It's named areas of towns. You might end up without a free hand to hold an umbrella. The solution, according to online retailer Despara, is to get an umbrella you don't need to hold. This week, the company began offering what it calls the Tiburigasa, which translates to hands-free umbrella. It looks like a nipple, like a condom, like the condom slash nipple. The hands-free umbrella is sort of like a raincoat, at least from the chin up. Basically, for anybody listening, you wear it. It has like a hood where your face comes out of it, and then it has a wide sort of a plasticky ring that extends beyond your body. So the idea is, I guess, water falls down on top of it, and it will roll off the side of you, but not hit your suit or whatever you're wearing. And then the rest is, you know, like rainproof material. So it's a hood with an extended ring around the edge. So it looks like you're wearing a giant disc that your head just poked through. The hands-free umbrella is sort of like a raincoat, at least from the chin up. There's a plastic hood with an opening for your face that you slip over your head. But once you're under the jawline, it starts to get unique. That's actually no material covering your body. It's a wide brim. Yeah, basically what I just said. So it's an interesting design. I don't know. I guess it makes sense for somebody in that market where you're carrying multiple things and you're trying to walk through the rain, but it's kind of ridiculous. It looks like you're wearing a garbage bag that has a hula hoop in it. In fact, you could probably do better with a garbage bag that has a hula hoop in it. So if you want to look like Condom Man or Woman, then go right ahead and wear that. Like, Japan has the weirdest things. I mean, sure, I love that they're very, you know, ingenious and they've tried such new things, but that would never fly here. I mean, you could wear it and be that unique weirdo, but, like, there's actually a lot of people I see in the pictures here wearing it. So, I guess why not? I mean, at least you don't have to carry anything, but you'd figure they would do something like they do here, where you have, like, the mini umbrellas that cover your head that you wear, like, a head strap with a chin strap or something. Why wouldn't you want to wear something like that, like a traditional one? The only reason I can think is, it would help if you're getting on and off the trains, because you just have to pull it off your head and it folds up. It does. It's not like it's going to have a lot of metal in it or have to be spring loaded like a normal umbrella. So that's Japan's condombrellas. That's going to do it for the weird news this week. Oh man! So coming up next, we've got a review of the Meg, followed by the final review of the Fallout cookbook for our Satan's Pantry.
Do you have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Hold that thought. It's crapper time.
The Meg, 2018's movie about sharks. Lots of water, lots of action, and an oversized prehistoric shark. Considering the last shark movie I watched was Sharknado, my expectations were in a strange place coming into this movie. The Meg introduces us to Jason Statham's new job as a deep-sea rescuer, pulling divers out of disastrous situations thousands of meters below the ocean's surface. The opening scene forces him to make a tough decision that leaves members of his team dead in order to save the lives of other people, and he ends up swearing off rescuing for life. Fast forward to Mano One, an offshore platform near China. A billionaire investor, played by The Office's Rainn Wilson, is visiting the facility to see how his investments are faring. The facility has been working on a theory that the Marianas Trench, the deepest point in the ocean, is actually not a solid bottom, but a curtain that holds an entirely separate ecosystem below it. Their theory proves right, as a diving craft explores this newly discovered world. But things go terribly wrong when a mysterious creature attacks the ship and cripples it with dwindling air supplies. Jason Statham is reluctantly hired to save the trapped crew, which includes his ex-wife, of course, and the stage is set. That is, until this plotline is wrapped up swiftly, and followed by a new set of circumstances needing some sort of rescue effort, followed by another, and then another. The plot feels like it wants to tell several different stories about a giant shark, so they decided to throw them all together in a line and mount a daring rescue to end each chapter. Each episode is thrilling and full of suspense and action, but you're never quite comfortable thinking the movie is ending, right down to the credits. The acting was slightly over the top at times, with a healthy side of ham, but it wasn't overly distracting. Some dialogue felt a bit flat, and many characters aren't given enough of a chance to come to life, so when someone meets their inevitable demise, it has a lot less impact. The sharks themselves get a somewhat limited amount of screen time as well, but this may be a good case for less is more. The looming threat of the Megalodon is likely more intense than what could have been if the toothy beast was constantly chomping up screen time, so the suspense level remains right where it ought to be through the film. Many of the characters felt a bit too archetypical, with a billionaire whose main character point is putting money before people's well-being, a gang of misfit tech nerds manning the station, and Jason Statham reprising his role as Jason Statham. Romance is touched on, but it doesn't dominate the plot, allowing the action to focus on shark-related events. As I mentioned before, the usual emotional moments that accompany the death of a character don't have any oomph, as many of these characters have only a few lines before their dinner. It's not to say each character is uninteresting, but having some emotional investment in the people on screen might have brought out some more feelings when things got bitey. Humor is sprinkled in throughout the movie, and while a few giggles were had, most of the punchlines were worth more eye rolls than chuckles. Overall, the Meg suspense carries it through a plot that doesn't know when it's over, and characters that never quite get their moments to shine, providing a passable shark movie that genre enthusiasts will either love or hate, and will likely just miss the mark for everyone else. Until the next review, I'm Mr. Tristopher for ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig!
It's inedible!
Now, you're already cleared for entrance in the unforeseen event of total atomic annihilation.
I'm here to pick up an order. Two large pepperoni and a calzone. Name is Fuck You.
I mean, technically, the corpse was defiled already.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we decided to take a look down the international aisle of your local grocery store. But as you've noticed over the last few weeks, we've actually had a chance to do something a little bit different here on the show. Thanks to Inside Editions for providing us with Fallout, the Vault Dweller's official cookbook by Victoria Rosenthal. We've had a chance to sample things from the Fallout universe, that being Nuka-Cola Quantum, Mississippi Quantum Pie, Instamash, Iguana on a Stick. And originally, we were supposed to have a couple more recipes here on the show, which we're going to have a chance to try out live. But unfortunately, a lot of us have actually been really sick over the past few weeks. So we decided to kind of tie things in with our coverage of Fallout 76, where since Alex is editing this show, I don't know where it is. It should be at the beginning of the show, all things considered. So I'm here to give you my overview of the Fallout official cookbook. So Victoria Rosenthal has done a wonderful job of putting this book together and kind of giving you an introduction to the world of Fallout through food. And there are quite a number of recipes here which definitely fit into Fallout 3, New Vegas, Fallout 4. And I didn't encounter a lot of these recipes in Fallout 76, simply because I didn't get a chance to do a lot of cooking in that game. But some items that definitely stood out to me is stuff like Yum Yum Deviled Eggs. You could find those in game. You could make Mirelurk Claw Cakes. You could do like a Rastag Stew at one point. Obviously Instamash. There were Sugar Bombed Carrots, although in the game they're just called Sugar Bombs. Another thing you could make was also the Baked Bloat Fly you could make. You could have Mirelurk Queen Steak. The dessert, there was Dandy Boy Apples. Blair was actually going to make this for the show, but just didn't get a chance to. She was going to make the Perfectly Preserved Pie, and the Radioactive Gumdrops were supposed to be on the show this week. One of the things that I really, really liked about the cookbook was specifically the drink section. As you guys heard, the first thing we tried was Nuka-Cola Quantum. And Victoria Rosenthal did a wonderful job encapsulating what I thought Nuka-Cola Quantum could taste like. Because if you guys remember, when Fallout 4 came out a couple years ago, they had like a Jones soda tie-in. And it was basically, I think it was their berry lemonade. But this Nuka-Cola Quantum that we got was a lot more sour. And it just, I don't know, it felt like something I really expected here to really kind of give you the oomph. There's also alcoholic drinks, like there's Rot Gut, Firebelly, Daddy-O, Stimpax, Radaway, and Special, which is to represent more of the mentats and more of the chemical stuff that you can do in Fallout. Now, if you had to ask me, is this cookbook worth it? Looking at the cost right now, $47 Canadian or $35 US. I'm going to say yes. Absolutely buy this, and here's why. You're going to get a lot more value and quote-unquote replayability out of this cookbook than you ever will get out of Fallout 76, at least in its current state. I realize that's taking a cheap shot at the game, but no, I seriously had a lot more fun with this cookbook having a culinary adventure with my friends exploring the wasteland of my kitchen than I ever did exploring West Virginia in Fallout 76. So the Fallout, the Vault Dwellers official cookbook by Victoria Rosenthal by Inside Editions, absolutely gets a recommendation from us here on This Week in Geek. We'll be back next week with Satan's Pantry, where I'm sure we'll try something disgusting. I think Alex actually has a cricket bar of some kind. So we'll try that next week. So guys, we'll be back right here on This Week in Geek, the flagship of stupidity.
Crawl out through the fallout, baby, when they drop that bomb. Crawl out through the fallout with the greatest of aplomb.
Basically, you're the geeks.
Leave me alone, geek boy.
Holy shit, you geeks are badass.
Well, folks, that's going to do it for this week. It's a bit of a shorter show because, again, I'm flying solo and there wasn't as many reviews in the backlog. I'm still working on some more, and I know the other guys are as well. So we've got some stuff coming up soon. The gift guide is coming in the next few weeks. We've got a Turtle Treasure from me coming this week as well. We've got, you know, back to a regular scheduled having the whole crew together for Twig starting this week. We're going to be taking our break sometime mid to late December while we go on holiday. And you know, there's not much I can say other than, you know, we're sort of in a holding pattern because everybody is just recovering from being sick. Birdman's got his anniversary of the amputation today and this week. So it's just, it's one of those, you know, let's just, you know, wait for the weather to clear up because it's been rainy, freezing rain. And it's just been sort of a clusterfuck. So, you know, we're basically spending time just catching up on things, you know, trying to stay warm, trying to stay healthy. Everybody else out there, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. You know, stay healthy out there, drive safe, all that sort of junk. Don't do anything I wouldn't do unless it's awesome. All right. See you guys next week.
Okay, son, now you're starting to scare the viewers.
Just act normal.
I'd ask you to do the same, but I'm afraid that ship has sailed.
Why are there so many ostriches?
But you have a game that is dipped in the
ropey, thick, window cocking.
So guys, we'll be right back right here on This Week in Geek, only on thisweekingeek.net and many other sites where I syndicate this crap, because I'm a media slut.
I like turtles.
Loose like your mom.
That's right.
No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to?
Me likey tater tots.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content. And subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at thisweekingeek. And check out our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. And if you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time. And remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
You have shies again.
Dude, it's a lady getting pooed on.
Whoa, is it Cartman's mom?
Oh, very funny.
Hey, it is Cartman's mom.
Es in mein Scheiße.
All right.
Es in a Scheiße.
Okie dokie.
Ah!
Es schmeckt gut, ja?
Click it off, dude, click it off. Dude, what the fuck is wrong with German people?
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life. Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.